Structured.
There we go.
Okay. And then you can take that however you want and put that together okay. with the other things
and,
that you've learned.
And there's
about.
Some people that were on Noise Bridge list and
yeah.
on for my Happy Space that had separate questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to look them up and then ask them.
Okay, that's fine. So the way that Quilted is structured, we're an LLC.
Mm-hmm. So you can be an LLC and a co-op.
Yes.
Okay.
So, we're cooperatively owned and we're cooperatively managed.
Right.
But we are technically, our tax structure is an LLC. There's another thing called a California cooperative. So you can incorporate as a California cooperative, but you probably can't because you're not a student.
We're in Texas and Texas cooperative laws are different.
Yeah. So I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
We were looking between structuring ourselves as an LLC or as a cooperative, or as a California cooperative. We found out for tax benefits reasons, I think the LLC was better, but it's still unclear. It's not entirely clear.
So you still get the tax passed through. The LLC, the only benefit to an LLC is that everything passes through to the LLC members. Like, if there is a profit,
mm-hmm.
it is divided amongst
yes.
the LLC members, and if there's a loss, it's divided amongst the LLC members according to the agreed percentage of ownership.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's how we have structured our LLC. We have structured our bylaws and our operating agreement
mm-hmm.
So that it's all equally and collectively distributed, profit and loss. So I can start from the beginning.
No, that's okay. We did the same. So right now, amongst the three partners of our LLC,
mm-hmm.
it's artificially 33%, 33%, 33%.
Great.
Even though the investment is uneven. Like,
right.
you know, it's like $15,000, $7,000, or $4,000 or something.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, so for us, our investment is all the same. We all have a $5,000 buy-in.
Okay.
When you become a worker owner. So we are we're worker owners, which means that we all work work hours, and we all work together, and we also own.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any owners who are not workers. So we don't have anyone who, like, gets profit but doesn't work.
That makes sense. Okay,
right.
So you are a worker collective.
Right.
That's the first kind that I found. Okay.
Uh-huh. So the way that we distribute, so when you buy in, we buy in with $5,000, and that goes straight into our equity account.
Mm-hmm.
When we distribute profit every year,
mm-hmm.
profit is distributed into our equity account based on percentage of hours worked.
Interesting. So if you worked X amount of hours, it's like having a dividend multiplied by number of hours.
Right. So the person who... So, for example, we can have someone who's working part-time, but they'll receive proportionally less profit.
Okay.
Or proportionally less loss at the end of the year. So both profit and loss is
are divided that way.
Yeah. Are distributed in the same way. We all work more or less full-time, so it tends to be at the end of the year where all of our profit tends to be... Very, very similar, very close.
So
but if we had one person who was working half-time,
mm-hmm.
then we have a system around that.
How does it work, like, for us, none of us make our living from this cooperative, right? It's more like finding a way to let people invest in the cooperative, but also have equal say. So we're thinking that there'd be we heard about this thing called voting shares versus investment shares, so that people could, every person would have to buy a voting share. Think of it like the $5,000 buy-in,
mm-hmm.
and that would be the minimum cost. That's the equity cost to get in.
Mm-hmm.
It could be very low, it could be like $150 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can have investment shares, which are if you buy into the company, then or if you buy into the co-op, you can have as many investment shares as you want to buy,
mm-hmm.
and that determines your dividend or loss at the end of the year.
Cool. I don't know. We don't use that, but
right.
that makes sense to me.
But for you, it's all. It sounds like it's all investment shares. Basically, it's all equity.
It's all equity. So the
and it's always $5,000.
When you buy in, it's always $5,000, and that just sits around. That when you leave the cooperative has to buy you out. So we pay you $5,000.
Yeah. You leave. You get your co-op equity back.
Right. We also do distribute profit. So everyone gets paid a wage.
Mm-hmm.
So we get paid a wage for all the hours that we worked, and that's considered a labor expense. And
is
that's
that
different
monthly
than
or
profit.
Yearly?
We pay ourselves every 2 weeks. We have a payroll.
Like a normal pay.
Yeah,
okay.
Just like everyone.
So how does that? What's the difference
between what we're paid in salary or
what we're paid? What you're earning your 2 weeks versus the profit share at the end of the year.
So we only, we profit share only once a year at the end of every year, although we've started talking about profit sharing twice a year to kind of help distribute that over time. Mm-hmm. The profit share at the end of the year, there's a proportion of our annual profit that's paid out in cash. Mm-hmm. The rest of it goes into your equity
account. Oh, it increases your equity account.
Yes, it increases your equity account. Both of those things are proportional, paid out proportionally to hours worked that year. And there's also part of your equity account is paid out in cash. So every... part of our equity account, because we need to pay off our equity accounts over time. So like since our equity account every year is increasing, based on the
profits,
proportional to hours worked, our equity accounts will continue to increase and increase. Mm-hmm. And if we never pay that out, that's a liability to us.
Right, it's tax liability in fact because it's cash on hand.
So we need to be paying that out. It's also not cash. We don't have.
Well, I know, but it's basically. It's been invested in the business, but it's your equity in that business. Mm-hmm. So you always try to, but it doesn't mean that you're trying to slam it back down to 5,000.
No,
right?
We just want to get
proportional something.
Right, we want to pay it out over time. So the way that we pay that out is we pay out 40% the first, and it's of, I think it's of our profit. Mm-hmm. So the profit that we make this year, we pay 40% out of that, 40% of that out now in cash. We pay 30% out of it next year, 20% the following year, and 10% that last year. So it's paid out over 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Out as
40, 30, 20, 10.
Into each person's, proportionally to each person.
Yes.
Does that mean that...
to each person, and next year's, so this year's profit, I'm going to get 40% of it this year. Mm-hmm. Next year, I'm going to get 40% of next year's profit next year. And I'll get 30% of this year's profit next year.
That's what I was wondering. So it does scale together.
Yes.
And it's constantly riding along year by year. So you are rewarded for long service with a 5-year tail.
That's true.
I mean, by the time you get to your 5th year, there's zero from 5 years ago.
Yeah.
10% from 4, 30% from 3, 40% basically going backwards.
It continues even if we buy out of the company, even if we leave.
So next year you're going to get a little something, next year you're going to get a little something,
yes.
Even though you've left
if
the cooperative.
If I left now, I still get 40% of this year's profit now, and I still get 30% of this year's profit next year.
Right, that makes sense.
So that ensures that we don't have to pay anyone else, like anybody, $20,000 the minute they leave.
How many people are participating in the Quilted Cooperative?
We just started, we just hired one, so there's 6 of us now.
There's 6. So 6 people have paid $5,000 in,
basically. The 6th person is paying this year.
Right.
Like, so we literally just hired them.
Do they have to pay it all at once, or does it get kind of strung along over time?
We have different, we've made different agreements for different people, so sometimes we'll pay half at first, and then we'll pay the other half later. And
it's flexible.
Yeah, it's flexible, and we make it up, depending on circumstance.
And... on a business side, so they're the member owners, so 6 of you now.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other structure then? There's the member owners, and each of you has a vote, and each of you gets to do stuff equally and proportionally?
We are run by consensus, so it's like unanimous voting.
Right.
Our consensus,
so like Noise Bridge, it's pure consensus.
Yeah.
Are you blocked by one person's non-consensus then?
If one person just wanted to be
obstinate... for no good reason at all, which happens in real life, does it stop the collective from functioning?
All of our decisions are made unanimously.
Okay, so it is just like Noise Bridge. One person can stop the process, and it's by goodwill that it continues forward. Basically, you all work in good faith and goodwill with each other, and if you didn't, this would be a problem.
Right, we don't, I mean, the idea, right, is that and since we're also very small, we don't run into the same kind of problems with decision making as other collectives.
Yeah, like for example, ATX Hackerspace has, 990 people, which means that we currently work by representative democracy, such that things that don't involve money, the members can vote on it themselves, and there's like we have like ridiculously low quorum, like 30%. However, things that affect monetary policy, the members give the edict to the board, which is 5 people, and the board handles day-to-day operations so that everybody doesn't have to deal with it.
Uh-huh.
In a cooperative, as you understand it, if every member is equally shared in, let's say, or it doesn't have to be, I guess, but if you had like 20 people, would you have the same, do you think you would have the same structure you have now? You would still continue with the consensus structure with 20 people?
And it's not because, like, I believe that cooperatives are that way. It's because I want to be part of an organization that, and this is the way I make my living. This isn't not, this
right.
isn't of the hackerspace. Like, this is my living, right. and it's my livelihood. So I make, like, this is what sustains my
employment. Yeah, that's what I would like to do for myself, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I would love to have the hackerspace be so productive, you know, for me that I could use it as a source of income.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my initial idea a long time ago. That's why I did start with an LLC. But
mm-hmm.
as it's grown,
mm-hmm.
and because we have this kind of democratic basis, mm-hmm. it's changed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we found out, well, with 80 people, it's kind of hard to do that
mm-hmm.
because, you know, there's that push between make money and mm-hmm. be hacker-y.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, I mean, also your, I mean, the structure of your organization, like, the whole mission or whatever of your organization is totally different. Like,
yeah.
we exist to do,
a
to
job.
Provide a service
yeah.
to other people. Like, we build websites and we do web development.
Mm-hmm.
We exist to do these things. Like,
mm-hmm.
having a space, like, I'm sure you have, like, you know, some kind of mission or principles or values or something that you're
yeah.
you guys share, but it's a different, totally different business model. You know what I mean?
Could be. I mean, if we wanted to be a shop, for example, a prototype shop or that sort of thing, then it would be closer. We'd be providing a service. Although
mm-hmm.
our service is to provide education to the community, to
mm-hmm.
To be a place where people can build things.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got this dual model. We're both a social organization, and
mm-hmm.
we want to be a place where people can do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in balance.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hard.
There's a lot of different businesses that are structured cooperatively. The thing that makes us a cooperative is not what makes our decisions. It's not the way that we make our decisions. We happen to make our decisions based on consensus, and it happens to be like a fully democratic process.
Mm-hmm.
But we could still be a cooperative and vote. We could still be a cooperative and go and make our decisions by a majority vote.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has one vote. I mean, that's not what makes us a cooperative. What makes us a collective, a cooperatively owned
business.
LLC
yeah.
is that we all own it. That's all.
Why did Quilted choose to become a co-op? What drove it? Well, or better question, and it kind of goes into what some of the people here asked. What drove you toward the cooperative model, and what other models did you look at before, if there were any others, before you decided, yes, a cooperative is what we want to be?
So I wasn't around for the founding. I joined about 2 years ago, and they started, they only incorporated as an LLC like 3 years ago, so they only incorporated a year before I was there, but they were still like running as a cooperative before that. There was three of them, two of them who started, but Quilted before that was kind of a union of freelancers,
mm-hmm.
And there was as many at one time as like six or seven or eight freelancers who literally started as like, why don't we all pool our portfolios together? It was designers and photographers.
Yeah, like
and,
a professional group.
Right, and developers who said, let's all pool our portfolio. We'll call ourselves one thing. We'll call ourselves Quilted instead of, you know, Ben Maurer and Eric and
right, like Joe blah, 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 and associates.
You know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
So they, like, called themselves one thing. They made themselves, like, one entity. And they took all their clients and, like, split all their client work.
That makes sense.
Sometimes they collaborated, but a lot of times people were still working on their own individual clients. But they had this structure, this organization to like...
Right. Like if you need a graphics done, this is the guy, but he's also working with somebody else, so maybe two of them could work together.
Yeah, but they didn't actually even work together as much. Now we're really like a shop. We're really a
right.
firm, and we all work together all the time. I don't think that they looked at any other... I don't think that, to my knowledge, it was ever even a question to not be a cooperative. I don't think anyone was really interested in that. We really wanted from the get-go to be... My understanding is that they really wanted from the get-go to be like a collective
right.
of workers who all owned it together.
With the six of you together, I mean, you're determined to be, you know, have consensus, work together. What has been the best what has brought you together and what keeps you together? What's the, I guess what Marshall here is asking is, what has been the best cooperation building event within?
Event.
Yeah, I don't know if event's the right word, but what, you know, of the clients that you're dealing with and such, is there a particular story or experience that you guys have that, that clicked and said, we couldn't have done this if we weren't a cooperative, or it worked really well because we were a cooperative?
Everything works really well because we're a cooperative. Like, everything works better because we're collectively run. Like, I also wasn't looking for... I was doing freelance before this, and I wanted to be a part of building something, and I wanted to be a part of an organization that I owned and invested in. Like, you can imagine in tech work, like, you're exploited for your labor all the time.
Yes, you are.
By, like, big companies, and I didn't want to do that anymore, and I wanted to be a part of something that I could shape and I could change. So another thing, like, so one really good example of, I think, one reason why, like, we shine, or, like, why it's important to be cooperative is, for example, our one of our worker owners, Rocket, started 4 years ago now, and a year, and started after having gotten accepted to grad school to do game development at MIT. So she started as a developer, wanting to do, like, Ruby on Rails and Drupal development with us, and then got into grad school and was like, I'm going to start this job, and I'm going to own this business, but I'm also going to go to grad school. And we supported her through 2 years of her master's. And now Quilted, before we didn't have a capacity for game development, and now we do game development too. Because
she's at the added skill.
Because there's added skill, and we supported her through adding that skill and capacity. And because she was an owner, now Quilted has the capacity to do game design. And level design, which we didn't have capacity for before. So it's also the thing that I could do. So since I also own the company, and because of the way that we run, I want to get into... And that happened with another one of our worker owners who didn't do any jQuery work before. Now is, like, really into jQuery.
Into jQuery. Mm-hmm. So if I'm understanding you right, not only are you the collective... Not only do you benefit by the collective skills of everybody, but it offers you the opportunity to increase those skills by cross-training or even by allowing someone to wander off from the collective, go learn, and come back to the collective.
Like, what kind of, like, startup or business model would you ever find that, like, you have a boss and you have, like, and other people own your company and you're employed as a designer and you decide one day, hey, I think I want to get into, you know, building mobile apps. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, we're not a mobile app company. Go find a job at a mobile app company. You know, and whereas here it's like, actually, I think I really, really want to build Android apps. Cool. You want to do that?
Now
Quilted builds Android apps. Like, now that's what Quilted does. So now what Quilted does is also game design.
Which
is really cool.
What would happen? How do you guys deal with people leaving the collective and coming in? I mean, you now have new people coming in. It sounds like people have left the collective before. Considering that a person may contain an important sub-skill set to the collective, how do you deal with succession or, you know, I'm not saying removal of somebody, but more, how do you deal with people coming in and going so that it doesn't hurt the collective as a whole? How do you protect the collective?
Right. So it would definitely hurt us if anyone left right now. And, like, that would for sure change the way that we do all of our... projects.
Are there any rules or, I mean, have you guys codified how a person can come or go from the collective?
We have some policies about leaving in terms of, like, how we pay them. Mm-hmm. And if someone chooses to leave, like, we mostly have policies around equity. I haven't been a part of anyone leaving. Like, and only the two people who started and, like, who came together, like, there were two people and there's a bunch of other freelancers. Mm-hmm. Only those two who, like, took Quilted and into, like, turning it into an LLC and stuff have ever been a part of anyone leaving, but they didn't have those kinds of policies back then, like, 4 years ago. Like, a lot of the policies or, like, a lot of the operating agreement that we have now has been really formed in the last, like, two to three years. Mm-hmm. Three to four years, maybe. And that first year or so didn't have the same kind of... I mean, we didn't even have collective decision-making before I started. Like,
sense.
It was right after I started that we decided to be run on consensus.
Okay. Yeah, because what I'm trying to get at is anytime you have X number of people together, drama can happen, mm-hmm. right? It's just human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's possible that someone might, you know, get hot-headed or something might happen. A client might be late, something, and it causes this person to go, ah!
Mm-hmm.
And under normal circumstances, you know, people go, hey, I quit, I'm gone. But that could really hurt the collective as well as themselves. So I was wondering if you had any policies about cooling off, or you're saying, you know, about paying out and such, but if say you wanted to leave the collective tomorrow, you've got your equity stake and you've got your dividend coming, would they immediately pay your dividend if you said, I gotta go? Or does it get paid out in parts? Or
We have policies over that we would pay it out over time. Like, I think it's something like a certain portion of something needs to be paid within the first 3 months after someone leaves. Those are all things that we've agreed to.
And then proportionally pay out again?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to replace yourself?
No.
Okay, so you're under no requirement to say you have to replace yourself or train someone up to do what you did.
No. Nope.
It's up to the collective to go shop around and maybe find somebody.
Yeah, and actually they might find someone who does something different than I do. I mean, like,
oh, just
really,
depending what they need.
Right, and it's because it's not a collective of roles, it's like a collective of people. Like, we're not a quilted isn't a cooperative of like 3 developers, 1 designer, and a project manager. It's like,
well, you find the things that meet the skills of the people you have. It's not that the jobs determine
the people that we hire.
People we hire.
Exactly.
Got
so
it.
We just hired, for example, a facilitator. She does strategic planning and group facilitation, and we're adding that and like as a skill within Quilted. So now Quilted has the capacity to do like strategic planning and training with other, you know, for our clients that we didn't have that capacity before. The same way that we added game design as a capacity.
I see. Now, another person asked, you're currently a technology company with some ties to the EFF, you know, the free, not the free software foundation model, but the open, you know, the kind of the open models and such. When you produce a product, you know, for example, anything from the NoiseBridge logo out to all the other stuff work that's being done, how does the collective choose what licenses and what kinds of how they control their product and how they let it free, you know, because that's still control. Letting it free is still controlling the product. And has that consensus changed since you joined the company in the first place?
Mm-hmm. It hasn't changed, and we primarily do our web development with Drupal, and Drupal is licensed under the GPL.
Yeah, right.
So for design work, we don't put any intellectual property on any of our design. I think all of our design is probably in the public domain.
Well, okay, but it has to be, right, if it's declared public domain, then it is.
Because we don't copyright or do any of that. We also don't have any products, like we don't create any fonts.
Right.
The NoiseBridge logo is all the logo design that we do is all open.
Creative Commons,
Creative Commons licensed.
Okay, so, for example, if somebody requests to create something, could they request that it be done, like, in Creative Commons non-commercial with attribution, or could they say, we would like you to make work that is Creative Commons commercial use only. Can they request that your work be licensed in a certain way?
Uh-huh. People could, and that would all be like on a negotiated like per client
type basis,
project basis. We haven't had anyone.
Yeah, this works into the hackerspace model in a specific way. So ATX Hackerspace has people who work on different projects. We have a security system that we build. We build stuff based on open designs, like a 3D printer called the Ultimaker. Which is now the ATX maker because we've made new, improvements to the design, and those are open projects.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have people who work on closed project designs or semi-closed, where, you know, they want control of their product. They like to tell people about it, but we don't want to control how they release stuff. Like if they work on it in the hackerspace, we want to say you must do it this way.
Uh-huh.
We just have our preferences, that kind of thing. Does the co-op? So the co-op doesn't decide what the licenses are. You just try to work within this greater model of an open community.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't. You're not restricted to working only in the open community. If somebody comes up to you and says, you know, we are an open foundation, but we need you to make a logo for us and a trademark that is ours and that we're going to pay our trademark fee for, you're actually okay with that.
I think we would be open to it, but it would be on a per-project basis that we would negotiate. And then everyone in the collective gets to make that decision.
And that's the other question. How does the collective make decisions? Like, do you have regular meetings, like, every week, or what's the structure of decision-making inside of a co-op?
We have two different internal meetings per week, so, in addition to, you know, any client meetings that you're working on. We have an operations meeting every Monday, and we have a strategic planning meeting every Thursday. Mm-hmm. The process for decision-making is we will come up with a proposal. It's all based on the consensus process, so that we might identify a problem, like, you know, this project's deadline just came up really fast, or we need to decide on a health insurance plan.
Well, that's another question we have in a second, but yeah.
That'll be the problem, and then we'll state a proposal. I propose we use Anthem Blue Cross and pay, you know, $900 per worker per month for these benefits. And then we'll list questions, clarifying questions about that, like, will that cover my annual physical exams? Will that cover chiropractics? Does it cover physical therapy? And then we'll do list concerns, like, I'm concerned that that cost is too high, or I'm concerned that that doesn't cover the kind of prescriptions that I want. And we'll modify the proposal to try to meet those concerns. Mm-hmm. So we have a process of, like, incorporating friendly amendments to the proposal to change it. Mm-hmm. And then we'll run it through the process again. And when there are no more concerns left...
No more blocks, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, a concern is different than a block. But for us, listing a concern means that you can modify the proposal to meet it.
Right.
A block is that there's nothing that you can do to the proposal.
Yeah, this is unacceptable.
Right.
So things can move forward with concerns, they just can't with a block. A person can block and that will stop it, but
yeah.
A concern merely says, please go back, you know,
mm-hmm.
If it can't be addressed, it can't be addressed, but if it can, great.
Yes. Or a concern might say, like, you might be able to list the ways that in which you could meet the concern. There's never been a block in the history of my being in Quilted.
Yeah.
I haven't experienced it yet.
Yeah, I've experienced them at Noisebridge, but not at... We haven't had blocking issues. We're not a consensus model in ATX Hackerspace,
mm-hmm.
but Noisebridge is, and I've experienced blocks at Noisebridge, but seldom. Like, they come up every once in a while, and it's usually on very contentious levels.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads into another question. John Kelly, one of our members, is interested in ATX Hackerspace having a health plan.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're not a company, we don't employ anybody, so nobody will touch us with a 10-foot pole, even though we're 90 people. Because they're not 90 employees, we're a collective.
Okay. So we are employees. We're both owners and employees, which is why we can provide healthcare.
Right, so you're an LLC, such as your LLC interface to the outside world is a familiar and common one,
mm-hmm.
such that it's easily explained
right.
to outside, you know, it's like having an interface, it's like having a Java interface.
Mm-hmm.
People understand what it is, and they can plug into it.
Right. I'm assuming that the cooperative business model, like the California cooperative or a Texas cooperative, would also...
It's familiar to those
right.
companies.
But I'm sure that in order to provide healthcare, you need to have employees.
Yeah. But if you're an owner member, even if you're not employed, it might be possible to say that you're a professional
right.
organization like the Lions Club or something.
Right.
So you have all the usual benefits. You have health benefits.
Yeah, dental,
you've got
vision.
Dental vision.
We also pay for our mental health, so we get all of our therapy paid, which is kind of cool. We do that
a lot of people want therapy.
Yeah. Like, anyone who wants to go to get mental health services or
that's
have, like, therapy.
Actually
most
kinda awesome.
People don't pay for therapy.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
It is kind of neat. It's a neat benefit anyway.
Mm-hmm. Chiropractic.
Especially in a highly creative organization.
Mm-hmm.
I found that the more creative you get, sometimes the more issues you have.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
We also have a stipend. So we have a technology stipend. We have $2,000 technology stipend every year, every 2 years for new computers.
Laptop or whatever. You determine
phones.
What you buy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you do. You have a kind of,
stipend.
Yeah, you kind of have like an IT, an IT budget. If you want a cell phone.
Yeah.
Or you want a laptop. You know, you have to stay within your budget.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want your cell phone paid for, you might not have the latest, coolest Apple MacBook Air or something.
Right.
Okay, that's actually kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So if there's six people, you know, doing the math, it's not a lot of money. $35,000 is just not huge.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the collective takes in more through working on stuff. So the
$35,000. Oh, you mean
the $5,000.
Oh no, that doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it's just a buy-in basically.
Yeah, it's just and it's kind of symbolic.
Yeah.
It's not. It doesn't help us run.
Well, the same thing is being bantered about inside of ATX Hackerspace. That's the idea of the investment share versus the voting share.
Right.
The voting share is the little stipend. The investment share is like real equity in the company,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't confer any voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
It confers dividend rights at the end of the year. That kind of
thing. Our business model has nothing to do with the buy-in or the equity. Right. Like, we run mostly on fee-for-service.
Right. Now, that given, do you know roughly, without exposing private information, how much revenue do six people generate every month, about?
Every month? I don't know. We just hired the sixth person, so she hasn't even started full time.
Okay, so five.
So she starts in January. But I think that our gross last year was 300 some thousand.
Okay, so you can generate quite a bit of cash flow that way.
And we also work exclusively with nonprofits and social justice and grassroots groups, so we mostly work with
nonprofit
sectors. Mm-hmm. And we have a sliding scale.
And you're not a nonprofit yourself.
No.
So this is kind of interesting. So a 501c3 can pay you for services because that's just one of their normal expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, you're a co-op attached to 501c3s at the hip by a thread.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good thread because they can give you the money and you give them a service. And it's equitable and it works out even under tax and law. It works out pretty well.
We've worked for people who are not nonprofits, mm-hmm. technically. We've worked for foundations, too. We do work for some philanthropic groups, but even startups. But mm-hmm. we all want to, like, we have principle or, like, values or, like, shared principles around trying to work with people who do really cool stuff. So mm-hmm. we've worked with people like City Car Share because they're cool.
I used to be a member. They're great. They're great. They're great.
And
company.
We worked with, like, a small solar startup because they're doing some really neat, you know, investment models in solar stuff. And we like solar. That's cool.
What kind of work does Quilted do?
We build websites, mm-hmm. and we do consulting, and we do game design, too.
Mm-hmm. No.
We also do design, so print work and
media.
Logos, and identity assets, and communications consulting.
So planning.
Strategy, yeah. Technology involved. We don't do a lot of mobile apps. We wouldn't be, like, opposed to it. We don't do... We don't do a lot of custom development. We mostly try to stick to giving people websites with a content management system that's commonly
right.
Used
so you
in
build
source.
A theme for Drupal, or you
build
WordPress sites. Or you
we
take advantage of
WordPress,
pre-existing technologies.
Yeah. We used to do WordPress, but we don't do as much anymore.
It's actually kind of tough. Ever since they went to version 3, working with the templates is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the it's
we don't do hosting.
So we're getting down to kind of the end of the questions people had. I'm trying to see if anybody has anything else.
Hey, that's Mark.
Yeah, Mark heard it. Let's see. NoiseBridge logo, yeah.
He's next door. And he has a co-op, too.
Oh, I should go drop by and say hello.
I don't know if he's there today, but he has a co-op, New Praxis, with three people that's run a little bit differently than ours.
Now there's you, there's Maria.
Yeah.
All right. So there was only one other question. I think it was off list. An LLC confers a certain amount of protection, if there's a suit or a lawsuit or something, only the assets of the LLC can be attached, not
yes.
that of the people.
Yes.
I guess because you're an LLC co-op, and every member of the co-op is a member of the LLC, this confers the same protection to you then? Like, this is completely out of my butt. But let's say that you design a website, but through an oversight, it doesn't have certain things like it's not good for the visually disabled.
Okay.
And so, someone sues you.
Okay.
You're saying, you should have designed it for the visually disabled, we're going to sue you, blah,
uh-huh.
in this wonderful
litigious... A client of Quilted's
okay. sues you back, saying, you didn't meet this thing, and I said you should do this thing, and...
And you didn't do it.
And you didn't do it, and I'm going to... And, well, or maybe you did, and it just, it's a sue-happy country.
Uh-huh.
Inside the co-op, does that mean that then you personally are... Your personal assets are not tagged or liable, only that of the
Quilted.
Cooperative as a whole is Quilted?
Yes, because I didn't take the job... It wasn't my job.
Right.
The contract was signed between Quilted and the client.
Right.
So the client would sue Quilted for, I'm assuming, breach of contract.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, if you, and the along the same lines, if something were to happen to one of the members of Quilted, you cross the street, get hit by a bus, that doesn't mean Quilted's gone. It's like any other company. It's not like a partnership. It's an LLC, which means it survives any single member.
Mm-hmm.
Last question is, who signs the contracts at Quilted? Like, if you have, if you guys have to get a new lease, move somewhere, mm-hmm. buy a piece of capital equipment, lease a copier,
mm-hmm.
Obviously not all six people have to sign for the thing.
Any owner of the LLC can sign.
So it's just any owner of the LLC can individually sign for a thing, a lease.
Yeah. We all can sign contracts, and mm-hmm. One of us will sign it, but it needs to be an owner. So actually, the newest person that we're bringing in is not an owner yet. Mm-hmm. And
she hasn't paid her $5,000, so she's not yet an owner.
And is still a prospective member, so they're a prospective worker owner, mm-hmm. and in that time they can't sign contracts, but they do participate fully in all of our decision-making.
But they can't but they can't independently or roguishly go and sign something. It does require consensus. Right. It would require the consensus of everyone to say, we empowered you to sign this, go sign this.
But actually also legally it wouldn't be binding because that person doesn't own the LLC. So even if you did sign something, and you weren't an owner.
No, I'm saying if you are an owner. Like if you decided tomorrow that you wanted to sign a 5-year contract for your phone or something to reduce the cost for yourself,
mm-hmm.
You are currently an owner. That doesn't mean you'll always be an owner. You might leave in the future. You can't just rogue off and do that. You actually have to be empowered by the collective through consensus.
Yes.
And then they say, yo, verily, you may now sign this. We have all agreed on it. Is this cool? Please sign this document.
Mm-hmm. There are some things that we can sign up for that don't require consensus. There are some things that we can do that don't. Any purchase under $250, I think, or any purchase under $150, so we can buy ourselves books, we can buy ourselves.
Yeah, there's like a petty stuff. Cash idea.
Yeah, on the credit card or on the company card. We can, pay for client lunches or something.
So owners have some flexibility in and amongst themselves.
We don't have to ask for everything.
And there is no, since you're on the consensus model, there's no particular leader either. There isn't a person that's considered the president or the thing. You are, because you're relatively small, you can all act in one voice.
Uh-huh.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
All right, I think I've run out of things from things people ask me, and I think I now understand at least the quilted cooperative model a lot better.
Yeah, it sounds like you have a lot of, doing to do, a lot of things to figure out for you guys, but my advice for what you're going through would probably be, you really need a shared vision, because we functioned as,
or at least the owners have to have a shared vision, at the very least.
Yeah, and if for a cooperative, mm-hmm. and, there's probably going to be a lot of this at the South by Southwest panel, and we've done. There's actually a resource that Quilted helped write.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a guide to cooperatives, and we're members of the U.S. Federation of Cooperatives.
Yeah, I noticed because you have a .coop address.
Yeah,
you have to be a member to get that .coop.
There's a lot of good resources, but there's a book that PDF that we helped write.
Let's see if I can find it.
What's it called? It's Guide to Worker Cooperatives. I'm not sure if we're on.
It might appear.
I can forward it to you. But that was before I started, that they helped write this. It's like a guide to how do you help form stuff. How do you help form a
co-op. I think we just lost the connection.
But I think that it's really important to have a shared vision. Because the other part about us is we were a collective of freelancers. But a collective of freelancers can... I think what makes us work really well is that we have a mission and we have values and a strategic plan.
Right.
We have strategic plans and we have a 3-year plan. We have a 5-year plan like any other... startup and we have a business model that we work on and iterate on and all those things have to be shared, including a shared vision of the kinds of clients that we want to work with and the kinds of projects that we want to take on. The model can work, but any organization without a shared vision is not going to go well, even if it's collectively run or even if it's a startup that has a president and a CEO. And
we're lucky with that because ATX Space has always had a strong mission statement. We have a strong set of bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
It's needing to be modified because now more people are sharing into the vision, which means that it needs to be modified. But it's not like we don't have any idea. What we don't have is we don't have a 1-3-5-year plan kind of thing. That's simply because we never thought we'd get to this point so fast.
Yeah, which is cool. I mean, it's neat that we started this planning, the strategic planning. We really recently started that last year, that our 1-year, 3-year, 5-year goals all have to be in support of each other, mm-hmm. and they all have to relate to our overall mission and goals.
Right.
And then we check in on our goals over time. And I think that that's something that a lot of maybe nonprofits are in, accustomed to having to doing that kind of strategic planning process, but a lot of co-ops kind of forget about that sometimes.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, even with the LLC that we have, we forgot to check in. You know, as we grew so fast, we kept forgetting to check in. And so we never, like in the last year, we've been in existence for 2 years, but only in the last year we thought, dang, we have to have a one-year budget plan.
Yeah.
Because now we're missing opportunities. People want to buy machines, people want to do specific stuff, we want to grow into a new building. And we knew we wanted to do these things that were kind of fuzzy, but now there's a lot more focus on what we have to do. Well, first of all, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, this, no problem.
This is, for me, this gives me a lot more insight, at least into the work of cooperative. And it certainly has given me some ideas of what we can do for a member cooperative.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll have an opportunity to talk with more people that, do, you know, there are some member-driven cooperatives that are businesses like REI and others. So hopefully I'll get a chance to talk about those. But now I have a much stronger understanding of what Quilted does, how it works. I mean, it obviously works. You're paid.
Yeah.
You have health insurance. You don't starve every month. So obviously, and the paychecks are regular. It's not like they've never failed you, right?
We haven't missed a pay period in 2 years. And 2 years ago, I think we had to delay payroll. We had to delay it because of our cash flow issues.
Right.
But we feel really solvent.
But you're booking jobs. They're coming in. It's regular. The plan works. And even though you're five now, a six-member cooperative, just because you have six members doesn't mean that you're all over the place. It means that you have a shared vision and you actually are looking forward.
We have a lot of resources about co-ops, and I can send you the guide to forming tech co-ops booklet that we did. And also Ben Maurer, who's our designer in Boston, is on the board of the U.S. Federation of Worker Co-ops. And Kieran, who's just starting with us in January, used to work at NASCO with the North American Student Cooperative organization. So we have a lot of connections, a lot of other national co-ops, and we are at the Worker Co-op conference every year, and there's a lot of, you know, and doing the tech panel at South by Southwest.
Yeah, I look forward to that. I don't usually, since I'm an Austinite, I don't tend to buy a ticket for South by Southwest because it's never worth it for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe I'll get a journalist ticket or something as tech
to see if I can get in. I've never gone before until we got invited to the panel, and I feel like this tech co-op panel and the whole future of work stuff is kind of
pretty cool.
Actually, next year is the international, this 2012 is the year of the co-op.
Co-ops, yeah. So. Do you mind if I take what I've recorded here, type it up, you know, post it to like the NoiseBridge list, because there are people who want to know. The other thing is, would you be willing to come down to NoiseBridge like Saturday evening or Sunday evening? There are a lot of people who are on the list who wanted to join this discussion, but I wanted to keep this discussion really focused.
Yeah.
They're really curious about this sort of stuff. I invite you and whoever else wants to come from Quilted like to NoiseBridge in the evening.
Yeah, I'd love
coffee, couches, and just more talk about cooperatives.
I'd be happy to. This weekend I'm out of town. I'm in LA.
Are you going to be around on Friday, chance?
I'm leaving on Friday, so I'm going to be gone Friday to Monday.
Okay. Well, I'm going to see if I can get consensus on NoiseBridge to see, because I jet in, so I'm here from Monday to Monday.
Okay.
Then I'm in Austin from Monday to Monday, and then I'm back here.
Okay. So,
I'll be back here just before the Christmas, the week before Christmas.
Yeah.
I'll be here the whole weekend long, so all the way 23rd, 24th, 25th. And I'd like to invite you, other people, I'll see how many other people I've got from different co-ops, to come down to NoiseBridge, sit down, and talk about this with all the people who are interested about cooperatives, and kind of share more of this information. Because there's a lot of disinformation about co-ops, and there's a lot of people who don't understand. They know they work, because, you know, they go to REI and they buy stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But
or Rainbow Grocery, or Chief Board, or
but they're fuzzy about the, you know, what the advantages and disadvantages of the co-ops are. One more question. I'm worse than Columbo. What do you think are the disadvantages of the co-op from your